What's up, sports fans? This is Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I am King Kaz. I am joined by JVZ, the greatest man that I know, only triumphed this week by Ash Ketchum, who finally won.
That's a good story that we hope to see in all of sports. Unfortunately, triumph is not something that we can ascribe to the U.S. men's national basketball team. I almost said soccer because I'm used to, you know, that sequence of words describing the soccer team. But no, this is the basketball team at the FIBA World Cup. They finished seventh, which is,
which is losing. They're losers.
Yeah, I mean, for the U.S., it really is a if you're not first, you're last sort of thing. I think the last they got bronze in the Olympics once, and then everybody lost their shit, and then the Olympic team, the 4 years after that was instead of the dream team, they were called the redeem team. Like it was just such a big deal that they got third, and then here at the FIBA World Cup, they got seventh after losing to France and then losing to Serbia in one of the consolation rounds.
Here's the thing, and I want you to answer this truthfully. And if DJM wants to answer this, I want him to answer this truthfully. Does anyone care?
That's the thing. Like as flippant as I sound, I find it kind of hard to be all that angry about this. Partly because it's like they very clearly had a bunch of players that did not want to play. Like they didn't want to show up. They turned down their invites to the national team, to the point that they had to pull players from the select team, which is the team that's that they practice with. And then there are a bunch of people on the select team that declined invites as well. I think there is a very specific reason for this. And I think it's specifically because the tournament was in September, like in the beginning of September. And, there's all these people talking about like, oh, what do we need to change? Jerry Colangelo, the president of USA Basketball, is like, I'm going to remember all the people that turned down these invites next time when it comes time for the Olympics. And it's like, okay, so that means you're going to turn down LeBron. That means you're going to turn down Steph Curry. You're going to turn down James Harden. You're going to turn down all the best players in the NBA when they decide that they want to play during the Olympics. So, like that sounds like bullshit to me, but
you know, I'm down for petty shit.
if there's anybody known for petty shit, it's the Colangelos. But I think this like the only thing that they need to adjust for this tournament is to like move it into August, and I think that'll be fine because I know at least as far as the Kings players, De'Aaron Fox was on the select team, and then it looked like he was going to make the actual team, and then he decided, nah, I'm going home. That's partly because, you know, that it's the middle of September right now. The tournament just ended. So they've got like a week off, and then he has to come start training camp with the Kings at the end of September because they have to take a flight all the way to India to play an exhibition game in India and then come back. The Kings already have Harrison Barnes on the actual national team. They had De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley on the select team. So both those guys decided to turn down their invites. They also have Bogdan Bogdanovic on the Serbian team, Corey Joseph on the Canadian team. So it's like they were going to have a bunch of their players just tired coming back from this overseas tournament in China just before they have to ramp up training camp and then go back overseas to go fly to India and play a game over there. And so it's like this tournament should be around Summer League because A, you're not expecting Summer League players to be playing for the national team. So I think like that's probably a good time to have this tournament, and it needs to be far enough away from every season that there's enough time to rest before the tournament and enough time to rest after the tournament. And I think that's the only change they need to make.
So I think the other thing kind of closely stands true to what the note DGM just passed, which is like no one cared until America placed seventh. But I still think no one cares. Like in the long run, until this thing is moved to a place where it doesn't impact the actual NBA season, right? Where guys wouldn't have to, wouldn't necessarily have to take time off, or in a time where people are looking to get back into basketball shape before.
Let me ask you guys a question. Let me throw a question out there.
Go for it.
Do you think that the whole idea of USA basketball, an international competition, I go back to one moment in particular that really stands out to me.
Paul George.
Paul George. Yep, there you go. It was when Paul George broke his leg. And really since then, players, teams, everybody, when it comes to USA basketball, it really hasn't been the same. Do you think that this placement in the FIBA World Cup will make a difference?
I really don't think so. Mostly because I think just the timing of the tournament is the biggest factor. And also, like, I'm not so gung-ho USA to be that upset about the rest of the world getting better, too. Like,
I think we live in a world with two problems. I think one, the rest of the world is getting better at basketball. Two, we have the same problem we have with everything else here in America, is we think we have nothing to prove because we are the best. Not we've proven we are the best, but we are the best. And I think that mindset rings true. And there's probably a little bit of fear too. But I think the mindset of living on our history is always a bad thing in American sports. And I think when it comes to these bigger showings of these things, we live on the history, right? So it's like how much we talk about the Jordan and the Dream Team and all that other shit, but there is no real accolade after that, right? Like, yeah, America went a couple more times in the Olympics and had good showings, but like, there wasn't anything that lived up to that in people's mindsets. Think about things like hockey and soccer and the miracle on ice. You know what I mean? We still talk about that crap more so than what is currently happening in U.S. like hockey or anything like that. So it's these things where we don't want to do the work is what I feel like.
Yeah. I agree with all that. One last point though, before we move on, the reigning MVP this year in the NBA is Greek. The reigning rookie of the year is Slovenian. The rookie challenge, what used to be the rookie challenge every year, is now the Rising Stars challenge, and that is Team USA versus Team World. So there is a lot of international talent in the NBA mm-hmm. now. The Spanish national team, which ended up winning the tournament, has I think six players at least that at one point played in the NBA or currently play in the NBA now. So, I mean, the rest of the world is getting better. That's what we want. We want this competition to get better. And then maybe then this World Cup will turn into like this big important tournament instead of kind of this afterthought where the U.S. team can play seventh and everybody acts like they care, but they don't really care that much. Or at least they didn't care enough to tune into the games. They didn't care enough to they get too upset. They're just they care enough to make jokes just like we did.
Yeah. So let's talk about the WNBA and their playoffs, which have been exciting to say the least. So you have the note down here. We're down to four teams, the Washington Mystics, the Los Angeles Aces, the Connecticut Suns, and the Los Angeles.
Las Vegas Aces. It's an expansion team. An expansion team from last year.
The Connecticut Suns and the Los Angeles Sparks. There are a lot of gifts going around, one of them being a clip from the Aces game that had a relatively good finisher. It wasn't like a hard dagger because there was still time left on the clock, but it was a really, really good play that has been making its rounds. And everybody has kind of been losing their minds over it. But it's just been a relatively good playoff that a lot of people are talking about. And it seems like there is starting to come some attention to this WNBA playoff that I don't think I've seen for a while, kind of in this grand scheme where so many people are starting to pay attention to it.
I think the last couple of years, aside from last year where the Seattle Storm won, the couple of years before then, I think it was just kind of the most exciting parts were the matchups between the Minnesota Lynx and the Los Angeles Sparks. And for some reason, those two teams just always went at it against each other, and they could not play a game against each other that didn't end up on being decided by the final play. So, this particular clip you mentioned also, it wasn't a final play sort of thing, but it was the Chicago Sky had this game wrapped up, and then a bad pass, and then what I still believe is a bad shot, which was a one-footed, one-armed three-point heave from well beyond the three-point line that managed to go in and ended up putting the Las Vegas Aces up by one. I think part of what makes this exciting, but I also personally kind of hate it, is that these first two rounds, there's eight teams, so they could easily structure this as an eight-team tournament, but they decided instead to have like two wild card rounds. And both of those rounds are single elimination. So I mean, this one shot was incredibly significant. It basically, had that shot missed, the Chicago Sky would have been advancing to the semifinal round instead of the Las Vegas Aces, because they just play one game, whereas the next two series are actually going to be best of five. So I don't know why they can't make these earlier rounds best of three or something. But in a way, it throws a little bit of chaos into the mix.
I don't know. I think of a lot of sports, basketball is one of the very few that lends itself to play well in a series style. I sometimes think seven games is a little too much, but I think a best of three, a best of five is right around a good number.
You play a whole season, and I think it's kind of shitty for it to come all the way down to one play. It's exciting, but it's also kind of unfair for it to come down to one play.
It's also the realm with football too.
Right. But that's also necessitated because you don't want them playing a lot of games. It's, every game they play adds more wear and tear onto their bodies. Whereas basketball, you could play a game every other night and be okay. I just wish these earlier rounds were a little bit longer, because then you could have like, this was an amazing shot to win game one. And then how is Chicago going to respond to this? I am glad Las Vegas advanced, just because they've got a strong all-star team with a second year player, Asia Wilson, and Liz Cambage. And they should be a title contender. So I'm glad they were able to escape and that they weren't snuffed out early on. But it sucks that we don't get to see kind of the counterpunch to this punch at the end of this game.
Yeah. I kind of fully agree with that. All right, going from there, we have some baseball stuff and some legal stuff, but the baseball stuff, what do you got, Trey Beasy?
Yeah, we forgot to mention this last time, but the Red Sox fired their GM in the middle of the season. And sorry, let me rephrase that. The defending champion Boston Red Sox fired their GM in the middle of the season. And nobody really knows why. Yeah, that's kind of the story. I mean, everybody's kind of speculating, like, what's the deal here? What's happening? And it'd be because of, I don't know, the farm system being depleted, or they were champions last year. They missed the playoffs this year. Maybe that's it. But like, usually you win a championship, you get a little bit more leeway after that. You get a little bit more trust. So not sure what's going on here.
Yeah, it's generally weird when a team that's doing well fires their manager. And usually it either comes down to disagreements between the front office and that GM over kind of day-to-day things. And somebody flexes their power, or usually kind of comes down to one of our favorite terms around here, getting ahead of it. So something else happened that hasn't seen the light of day yet.
If I can offer a little bit of insight on the general manager of the Boston Red Sox, Dave Dombrowski. Sure. Before he worked for the Boston Red Sox, he was actually the president and general manager of the Detroit Tigers. He was the general manager and architect during the Tigers' not quite a dynasty run of the 2000s, with the run of signing Ivan Rodriguez, Pudge Rodriguez, Miguel Cabrera, drafting Justin Verlander, getting Max Scherzer in his early years, and on and on and on. American League division titles, championships, all of those things. No World Series, but what are you going to do? But at the time, his firing from Boston was very, very similar to the time he was fired from the Tigers a few years ago, in that it was kind of sudden, and it was also during a time where the team was not living up to expectations. And one thing about Dave Dombrowski as a general manager is that he is very good at trades and very good at making big deals. But it looks as though the trades that Dave Dombrowski has made with Boston, and maybe just the overall direction of the team, probably wasn't meshing with what Boston was looking to do going forward. One of Dave Dombrowski's biggest weak points is that he has never developed too many major league prospects at any level. He always trades prospects to get bigger players. That's how he signed Miguel Cabrera. That's how he was able to make some of the deals for the likes of Omar Infante and Anibal Sanchez with the Tigers. I think he made some pretty big trades and signings in Boston as well. And he did get them a World Series. So them firing him while they're still defending the title is really surprising. But unless somebody slept with somebody's wife, which we can't really speculate on, all I can say is that the Boston Red Sox organization was not happy with their farm system. And more often than not, that's usually because Dave Dombrowski traded all of their prospects away to get some major names and some major talent. That's the only thing that I can come up against. And no, yeah, I don't really care if the Tigers bring him back or not.
Like, with what you said, it seems like there's probably a series of backroom meetings of like, all right, like, you hit us a little hard. Let's slow down a little bit here, because you're also going to start hitting the high end on what we want to spend on players as well. Like, because we've talked about the baseball spending woes and how some of these teams don't want to spend money.
That's not Dave Dombrowski's MO. He spent all of the money when he was with the Tigers.
Right. So I definitely could see it maybe being the first thing I said, where you have people who are flexing on each other, and then somebody flexes a little too hard, and now they're in an unemployment line.
So the Red Sox, I believe they do have the highest payroll in baseball, which made sense when they were winning a championship, and I guess not this year. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, so it kind of makes sense. Okay, we want to move in a different direction. But also kind of like don't, I feel like once somebody gets you a World Series, you kind of owe them the opportunity to get themselves out of the situation they created. But I guess they're deciding. Money,
like if you're losing lots and lots of dollars, and you can't see the ceiling of that, I think you get worried is what happened.
The thing is, I just don't believe that they're losing that much money because they are one of the premier brands in baseball. So
maybe not, but to people who hum and haw over every dollar, they are. You know what I mean? Like when you kind of think about like what you could do with your dollars, kind of thing. I don't know. It's a weird situation, and we could speculate it all day, and I don't think we'll get that close. Hopefully, somebody there is doing some good investigative reporting, and we'll get a more defined story. But there's definitely something weird going on there.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be as simple as we think, but it seems a little quick. So.
All right, what else do you have here in the baseball news?
MVP Christian Yelich is out for the season. Reigning National League MVP Christian Yelich is out for the season. The Brewers are in the middle of a wild card chase, and they are one game back behind the Cubs. So the timing of this isn't great. And obviously, it's just a devastating injury, just a broken kneecap, which sounds like it hurts like hell. So that sucks.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a rough one when one of your better players is definitely going to just end up being out and you're in the race. So we'll see what they can do. We'll see if they can kind of keep at it. I think the Brewers are doing relatively well, so I don't know how hard that's going to hit them, but it's definitely going to hit them.
Yeah.
All right. On to the last bit of the roundup. JVZ's calling this legal stuff because we have some kind of court cases and law things to talk about here. So this first bit is a California lawmakers passed a bill called the SB 206, allowing college athletes to profit from endorsements. Now, how much do we know about this, and what does this possibly mean?
This is the Fair Play to Play Act that we talked about a couple weeks ago, where the NCAA kind of threatened that if this goes through, then we're going to have to ban all California colleges from participating in the NCAA playoffs or the NCAA, their respective NCAA postseasons. So. This is, the state assembly passed the bill. It goes to the governor's desk, and he has about 30 days to sign this. So whether it gets signed or not is basically going to come down to a bunch of lobbying. But it, for a progressive state like California, it's probably going to go through. So this is going to end up forcing the NCAA's hand to see whether they are legitimately going to make good on their threat or not. Or because if they don't, this looks like something that can set a precedence for other states to follow. And eventually this could end up changing the whole NCAA system.
I think this is the kind of the thing we've been talking about that we've needed. So hopefully I want this to lead to something. I really do. I feel like it's going to end up getting lobbied to death and then it's not going to mean anything. But I really, really, really kind of want them to make that stand and then maybe have other states follow suit to just force the NCAA's hand. But I don't think we're ever going to get there.
And just to be clear, this doesn't pay the players. It just means that players cannot be banned from making endorsement money. So if you want to pay a player to star in your commercial, then you can go ahead and pay them to do that in California. So
yeah, which also would make, you know, which would also add a proposition to schools in California, which is why I say it would then put other states in a position where they have to think about doing something like this. And if more states start doing it, then that, in a sense, starts to force the NCAA's hand. And I think that would be the best case scenario. And I would love for that to happen that way, but I don't think it is. So
yeah, I mean, this could go messy. This could get petty.
It'll definitely get petty. All right, moving on from there, talking about petty, let's talk about LeBron's Taco Tuesday.
Apparently this has been going on for a long time, but if you follow LeBron on Instagram, he does these Tuesday posts. Taco Tuesday is just like a family thing that as a general concept, Taco Tuesday has existed for the longest time. Like, who knows who has the actual trademark, but he's been doing these funny little Taco Tuesday skits with his family. It's been entertaining. It's just a basic alliteration. I didn't even know you could trademark this, but LeBron tried to trademark it. And naturally that got denied for all the reasons that are just
good.
Sometimes when athletes try to trademark stuff like this, it's just so, like, it's not meant to be like a profit grab, or at least I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here. Just usually it's so that they can't have the term co-opted for something that they don't approve of. When Colin Kaepernick was doing
this Tuesday, I want Sunday fun day.
Okay. You can try, but it'll probably get denied. And
as it should.
Like when Colin Kaepernick was doing the whole like kissing his bicep thing to like celebrate the tattoos that he has there, then people called that Kaepernicking, and then he trademarked that so that like people could not use that term and that type of photograph to do like unsavory things. So this thing that he started could not be used for something that eventually would come back to bite him in the ass. It's not always I just want to grab as much money as possible. I want to trademark this thing that has existed forever. I don't know why he waited till now. I don't know why it took this long for those clips to go viral, but they did. So, and I think this is a good decision, and it's everything's kind of returned to normal regarding Taco Tuesday.
Yes. Yeah. Fuck you, LeBron. All right, moving on from there, let's get into the meat and potatoes. We got our first big story of the day. Alabama is having some trouble getting students into seats at their games.
It's weird. I mean, Alabama is one of the top college football programs in the nation. Usually they're not winning the championship, they're the runner-up. Like over the last 5 or 6 years or so, basically ever since they instituted the actual college football playoff or the four team mini tournament that they have at the end of the season. And, but, like these big powerhouse schools, what they always do to start the season is schedule like really shitty games against sometimes non-conference teams and sometimes like the teams from the lower division, the football championship subdivision. These games are usually blowouts. Someone who used to go to college football games, even when your team is good, sometimes students don't feel like staying for the whole game. They just kind of show up drunk and then they leave so that they can go party mid-game.
Yeah.
And so apparently Nick Saban didn't like that. So Alabama is now partnering with this app called FanMaker that uses location tracking and tracks like all of the fans inside the stadium. And so like you earn points for attending the game and then you earn more points for staying all the way to the end, but it can tell when you left. So you're not getting, you get 100 points for showing up, but you're not getting the 250 points for staying until the fourth quarter if you leave early. So it's kind of creepy. It's kind of extra control-y, kind of flies in the face of, I think, what most people who attend college football games kind of expect.
Yeah. Now I feel like this is just going to make people show up and leave just to be spiteful. Like, And DJM says, like, Nick Saban just doesn't have enough control or enough things to be angry about. This is so... One, it's a total invasion of some kind of privacy. I guess if you decide to install this app, you're agreeing to the terms of it. Cool. But, like, this says, like, they're making students install this, and I'm like, I'm wholeheartedly against
that. They're not quite doing that. It's you need this app in order to buy tickets for the college football playoff and for postseason games. So
I really want to jump in on this one, guys, because this one has me a little heated. And not to go full on college football game day hot take here, but this is indicative of a problem that's been going on with the University of Alabama that I've heard about for the last couple of years. Nick Saban has brought up a couple of times in pressers and whatever that students aren't staying for the whole game. Well, Coach Saban and the athletic directors at Alabama, and I'm just going to go ahead and throw in the whole SEC conference here. When it's widely regarded, when your non-conference football schedule in the SEC conference, and specifically the University of Alabama, is, for the lack of a better term, booty cheeks, you really don't have much to give the fans a show for. Like, in recent years, Alabama was scheduling non-conference games against the Citadel. They're like the third tier service academy. They're not even one of the halfway decent service academy football teams like Army or Air Force. It's the Citadel, and these are the games that he's upset that people aren't attending and staying for. And there's always this talk about how the SEC doesn't really schedule very strong schedules. So if you want people to stay, give them something to watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm done. That's my hot take. I'm done.
Oh, I agree with all that, but also there is the aspect of this that this isn't entirely a mandatory thing. It's just kind of a thing you have to do if you want to get playoff tickets, because that's what they spend those points on. On one hand, it's like, yeah, this is stupid, this is invasive, but at the same time, like, maybe they want to have some incentive system so that only the people that are willing to stay and put up with this are the ones that get priority for those playoff tickets. And I don't know. I do agree that, they should come up with a better schedule. They should find better ways to incentivize people showing up to the games. And, you know, if people are going to leave because you're blowing out the other team, then, I mean, that's partly your fault for being too good, which is kind of a problem with Alabama right now. Not to advocate that they make themselves worse, but, you know, or it's a problem with scheduling weak teams. Like, you want people to stay engaged until the end. You have to have games that are engaging until the end. They're just not doing that. So, you know, voluntary or not, the system is creepy. I guess I'm just kind of legally okay with it, but I don't know. I mean,
it's bad.
Go to Alabama, this is what you put up with. That's what you get for having a powerhouse program.
It's bad form, and I think we just move on from there. Let's
I don't
talk
have sympathy
about
for the students. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Let's talk about some NFL news. Obviously, some injuries. We are a very, very, very big fantasy football podcast here. So a lot of this in connection is to kind of almost give a report on fantasy football. So to go through this, Nick Foles, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger are all out with major injuries. I forgot what happened to Brees. I know he went out.
He hurt his thumb. But that's going to take like 8 weeks or so. Ben Roethlisberger's out for the season. Nick Foles is out for the season. Andrew Luck retired before the season started. Apparently there's something wrong with Cam Newton. And Sam Darnold has mononucleosis. And apparently his backup, Trevor Siemian, just went down. So the Jets are kind of on their third quarterback now.
Yeah, it's kind of oddly enough, for me, I picked a lot of the Giants wide receiving core, and a lot of them are down and out. One of them being out with a suspension, and then two went down in a couple of games. So hopefully they'll be coming back soon. And then you have some stuff in here for Adam Vinatieri, who's been had some whispers around retiring.
Yeah. Adam Vinatieri, who is the oldest player in the NFL. He had a rough week two. He had a rough week one, and then last season, his last game of the season last year, he had a rough one there. He's missed extra points in three straight games. So, and then a couple more missed field goals on top of that. So it's, you know, kicking being so much of a mental game, it's almost like, okay, he's got the yips now. He's went, you know, over 20 year career without having the yips. I mean, I think Adam Vinatieri might be one of the last players that, if not the last, he might have been playing since I started watching football. It's weird. There were talks that he was thinking about retiring because he told a reporter that, you know, he was going to see him tomorrow. And usually that's not something that happens. Usually the reporters and the players don't talk to each other on Monday. So there was a lot of speculation after that, after three bad weeks and what kind of mental toll this might have on him. But the Colts came out today saying that, that Vinatieri is going to be their kicker for next Sunday. So it's kind of left us in this limbo situation of retirement watch, where it seemed like it was very clear that the player was leaning towards retirement, but somebody convinced him to try to tough this out. And we'll have to see what happens there.
I don't know. Seeing somebody like that retire kind of puts sometimes careers in perspective when somebody's been around that long.
Yeah, I think the next youngest players... Sorry, the next oldest players in the NFL are Tom Brady and Sebastian Janikowski.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Drew Brees is pretty up there. 32, but not.
Drew Brees is like late 30s. So Vinatieri is, I mean, so like in recent years, he's like his age hasn't really shown other than the fact that he can't kick long field goals. And by long, I mean greater than 50 yards. But he was fine for, you know, 40 some yards or less. And so Drew Brees is 40. Sebastian Janikowski is 41. So I think Janikowski and Brady were drafted in the same year. So I believe Brady is 41 or 42 and intends to play until he's 45 at least, but probably will end up playing until he's 60.
Speaking of quarterbacks,
perspective.
Yeah, speaking of quarterbacks, let's talk about somebody who's been having a good showing. I'm not going to call him good, but he's been having a good showing, and that's Lamar Jackson of the Baltimore Ravens. A lot better showing than goddamn Eli Manning, but he doesn't have receivers, so we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson, I think, came in with a lot of buzz last year, even though he was going to be the backup behind Joe Flacco. And then midseason, they made the switch.
Baltimore tried to run Flacco out of town.
he's not an elite quarterback.
To give them a different look. No, trust me. People here were trying to run him out of town.
Yeah, so Lamar Jackson is a breath of fresh air. He's 8-1 since that switch was made, and 2-0 to start the season. For the fantasy people, number one overall fantasy player, period, not just quarterbacks, just overall. He set records in the first game of this season, but 324 yards and 5 touchdowns against the Miami Dolphins. And then this weekend against the Cardinals, 272 yards, 2 touchdowns, and followed that up with 120 yards rushing. So,
but I don't want to take anything away. I'm just saying one of those teams was the Dolphins.
Yeah, and we'll get into that soon. But to follow that up with another really good performance shows that it's not entirely a fluke, and especially after the good performances he had towards the end of the season last year.
Yeah.
I think he's showing that. I mean, this was the guy, you know, kind of prototypical black quarterback that gets told that he should switch positions, and he is balling right now as a quarterback, both as a passer and as a rusher. So, you know, that this is, I love players like this. So
I think it's this dumb thing, because I feel like we've proven more than not that having a quarterback who has the decision making and the athleticism is generally a good thing. I think everybody always likes to jump back and point fingers at like RG3 and like a very few other exceptions to the realm. But there are so many other quarterbacks that you have listed here that he has, you know, put his name next to, being Cam Newton, Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, Michael Vick, you know, just to name a few of people who have
Aaron Rodgers in his younger days. Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
Like to have that ability to be the decision maker and kind of almost in a sense need to have the ball first to do that, right? Like could he be an effective running back? Sure. But does that take away from his play? Yes, because I think having somebody who has that skill set, who has that ability to go, okay, now is when I throw it. Now is when I run with it. Now is when I do X. I think Russell Wilson is also a really good person in that perspective. He may make the decision to throw a little more often than to use his athleticism. But I think, just in general, I will always stand for the athletic quarterback. I like the athletic quarterback, and it's not even just a race thing. I just like a good decision maker who also has the ability to make a play other than throwing it.
I mean, it goes all the way back to the days of Steve Young and Joe Montana, and that's why I personally love him, because, you know, those were that's what I grew up watching the 49ers do, is just having a mobile quarterback. I think Lamar Jackson is a step above that in athleticism. And as far as like the decision making, I think he's a little bit more quick to run. But I personally, that's what I want to see more, because I don't know. I'm a guy who likes watching shorter plays, and I like watching a team just kind of pick apart another. I like watching an offense pick apart a defense 10 yards at a time, and a quarterback that can make the split decision to, you know, they drop back to pass and then they just make the split decision to run because they see an opening and they get your 10 yards, first down, have another set of downs, and just move the ball down the field that way instead of, you know, trying to hang back in the pocket and air it out all the time. I love that dual threat. I love the versatility that brings to an offense. Now, that always brings in the caveat of if they're running a lot, then they're getting hit a lot, which is why guys like RG3 ended up getting hurt. And guys like Michael Vick, you know, he had a couple decent seasons in Atlanta, and then he had his whole arrest, and then but then when he came back for Philly, he had one great season where he was playing like this. He was playing like Lamar Jackson is playing now, and you know, but then he got it hurt because he was taking a lot of hits while carrying the ball. So that's always the drawback. But
it's also you got to try to. I think when you have that athleticism, you have to not have a superhero complex, which a lot of these guys do.
Michael Vick especially had that.
Yeah. Cam Newton has that, where they're big, they're tough, but I think sometimes you just have to be a little bit smarter on not taking that hit or not taking that challenge. I should say, rather than not taking the hit, I think it's the taking the challenge of, oh, I could shake this guy off. And I think that's just not a thing you should always do when you are the decision maker and you are that person. I think you should maybe more often than not take the safe hit, you know what I mean, and just go down and not fight it.
Slide, but I think that's, you know, when you slide, the defenders are not supposed to hit you because as soon as you slide at the start of your slide, that's where they mark the ball. But yeah, it's like get across the first down line, then slide or get out of bounds or do whatever you can to not take those hits from those defenders that are just itching to hit you. I just wish there were more quarterbacks that were good at that. And I wish teams, I know it's weird for me to say this because I'm always all about player safety, but I wish teams would not try to take that type of mentality away from quarterbacks who like running.
I gotta tell you, on Sunday watching the Lions and Chargers, seeing Phillip Rivers run 12 yards for a first down during that game one time, and seeing Matthew Stafford doing the RPO and doing the zone read and the quarterback option stuff, that was wild. It was mind-blowing. So, JVZ, I think that this is not as far off as you might think.
Yeah, I mean, I hope not. And, I mean, guys like, I know Andrew Luck is a terrible example because he's retired now and partially due to injuries. But it's like, I mean, yeah, part of it is a race thing because it's like we don't talk this way about white quarterbacks that are like this, like Matt Stafford or Aaron Rodgers or, or going back to, you know, Steve Young, Jeff Garcia, Josh Allen, which DJ.
Josh Allen is basically a very, very young, very early Steve Young.
I'm not allowed to talk about Josh Allen right now.
I feel like we're just not allowed to talk about Buffalo in general. So that's why people aren't talking about Josh Allen, but maybe people should be. So it's, if he has another couple good weeks, then, you know, maybe he's a guy that we should all clue in on.
But
if he's playing this.
In all seriousness, I did throw it out there as a joke. I think legitimately Tebow might have been the only person.
Well, Tebow couldn't throw at all. That was his problem.
All right, he could throw a good 15 yards.
I'm not going to let you convince me that he could throw the football.
God damn it. All right, you know what? Fine. All right, let's talk about some other stuff. Let's talk about, once again, this is kind of a thing that rears its head every so often, and that is these bounty plays on players. And once again, it is reared its head towards a guy that I like, Odell Beckham Jr. Found out from fellow Browns players that Greg Williams told players to hurt him, which once again puts out that bounty thing again that a lot of teams have gotten in trouble for.
Yeah, specifically because it's Greg Williams, and Greg Williams is kind of the architect of the original Saints bounty system, and I mean, caught on tape, you know, advocating for players to get hurt, talking about bounties for or those players getting hurt. And, you know, whether or not you agree with the way the league cracked down on that, Greg Williams was banned indefinitely from the league for doing that. And then a couple of years later, they just let him come back, and everything's kind of been calm since then, aside from, you know, the dealing with the whole Browns head coaching situation last year, when Williams was the defensive coordinator. But yeah, now apparently, now that Odell Beckham Jr. is a Brown, his new Browns teammates have basically told him that Greg Williams told them to injure him preseason game. And, you know, those are definitely the games that nobody wants to get injured in because they are meaningless. And
yeah. It was a game from 2017 in week two of the preseason.
And so it's just like, I don't know, when they let Greg Williams back into the league, I was mad because the guy basically showed like no remorse. He's he was the architect. Like, I mean, if he's probably the most guilty of any person involved in the whole Bountygate scandal, and for the league to just kind of let him back in, I thought was kind of soft. And then, but the expectation when you let somebody back is that they're not going to do this again, but he's very clearly doing this again. He's just trying to be better about hiding it. And, I don't know. I wish Greg Williams would just get kicked out of the league permanently. He's the defensive coordinator of the Jets now. So,
yeah. So we'll see how that goes, because hopefully the Jets won't put up with this shit. All right, so let's talk about the Dolphins. So we talked about how Lamar Jackson kind of ran up the yardage on them and was able to get 5 touchdowns. But that's probably because the Dolphins are bad. Legitimately, they are one of the worst teams in the NFL and have been for a pretty long time.
Yeah, so this is a pretty blatant tank job. They've been trading away their best players since kind of the start of training camp. Ownership has basically declared that this is going to be a process, a quote unquote process. not necessarily their words, but the concept of the process, which is, you know, nowadays is taken to mean a multi-year tanking operation in order to acquire good draft picks, good players. And just as I say this right now, the Dolphins just traded defensive back Minkah Fitzpatrick to the Steelers for a 2020 first round pick. So whatever assets they had, Laremy Tunsil, with the few good players they had, they've gotten rid of all of them. They lost so badly that first week that a bunch of players kind of demanded to get shipped out of there. Like, they just don't want to be around for this. It's bad. They've been outscored 102 points to 10 combined in their first two games. So you're giving up an average of 51 points per game. That's just sad. And it's sad that your fans, they're going to have to get put through this. It's looking like they are going to make a pretty serious run at an 0-16 season. But the last two teams to do that actually had a couple competitive games, and it's kind of hard to envision the Miami Dolphins having any competitive games at this point. With the lineup that they're putting out there and the fact that few good players they have, they're not even thinking of having them stick around for the rebuild. They're just getting rid of them now.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about trust the process in regards to basketball a lot. We haven't really ever gotten much of a chance to talk about it in regards to football, because I think football is in a sense almost a longer con than it would be in basketball. I think you have to kind of go deeper and for a lot more years, at least 4 to 5, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you have 53 players on your roster, so one player is not going to change everything like you would have if you drafted LeBron or something.
You start with
a good quarterback, but then you have to have an offensive line to protect them, and then so like it's a multi-year process, but it's also one where like you don't have to be the absolute worst. Like you could just be bad. You can be the second worst team in the league and still pick high enough in every round of the draft in order to acquire good players. It's more about how well you scout versus where you pick. And there's kind of no need for this complete overhaul and no need.
So do you think you go for and either one of you could answer this, JVZ or DJM. Do you think you go for picks and keepers, right? So you go for the picks, you get the picks, you pick the players that you think you want and you keep them, or do you think you go for perceived pick value, which would more mean you try to trade for the value of the pick for a young prospect that is of equal value already, that has kind of shown themselves, you know what I mean, like that has kind of already been in the game maybe a year or two, has shown relatively good numbers, rather than for that development prospect?
I think
that's literally what the Dolphins did when they got Josh Rosen.
I still think you should just make the picks, just usually because it costs a lot to get a proven young player, like multiple first round picks to do that. And it's I think you build faster by drafting the players instead of getting cute with the picks that you have. If you can package maybe a couple third and fifth round picks to like move up in the first round or so, then sure. Other than that, I think at this point, they've depleted so much talent that they kind of just need to acquire as much talent as possible and go from there. Because they're scraping the bottom of the barrel at this point. DJM brings up Tua Tagovailoa and the Alabama quarterback. And I don't know, like if you see Miami Dolphins and you see that, holy shit, I'm gonna have to play on this team next year. Like, I don't know if Tua is a senior or not, but if he's not, I would consider staying an extra year. Like, I know you get paid earlier, but sometimes if you just end up in a bad situation, there's no, then that will torpedo your career.
You don't think he could Patrick Mahomes it?
Patrick Mahomes got to play behind Alex Smith for a couple of years while they built out that team. So by the time he took over, that team was ready for him.
Not
every quarterback is Peyton Manning where you can just take the reins immediately. And, I mean, even Peyton Manning's his first year, like it was bad, and he threw a lot of interception, but he learned quickly, and the Colts built a decent team around him that eventually was good enough to win a Super Bowl. And that's a long ways away for this Miami Dolphins team. It's just the beginning of the season, and it's been like a long, sad season.
All right. Speaking of Miami, we're going to keep this last story there as well. But we're going to move it over across town to the Miami Heat and their arena, the American Airlines Arena. So the namesake of that arena is going to its sponsorship time is going to run out. American Airlines is no longer going to be the namesake for the arena. So people are putting in bids to be the namesake of the arena, and one of the biggest bids comes in from porn site Bang Bros, which would have the Heat playing in Bang Bros Center, maybe.
Yep. Bros Arena. Bang Bros Center, the BBC. Currently it's the American Airlines Center, which is almost what you said, but the only reason there's a distinction there is because the American Airlines Arena is actually the arena in Dallas, which I think is why American Airlines pulled out of this sponsorship, because they decided two basketball arenas is pointless.
Even in this article, it says the American Airlines Arena a couple times.
Oh, okay. Maybe I got them flipped. But like the two names are slightly different, and for some reason they're sponsoring both teams, which was really nice for them when those teams played each other in the finals twice, but now it's probably cost him a lot of money. So, this bid's probably not going to go through. It's a $10 million total bid, which I think is 5 years if they're going to make it equivalent to what American Airlines was currently paying. There's already if a liquor company went in and tried to sponsor the building, they wouldn't be allowed to. And if, you know, a tobacco company came in and wanted to, they wouldn't be allowed to. I don't see a porn site being able to do that. And it sounds like the local government is like, wait a minute, why are you even asking about this? In a way, this is kind of a publicity stunt.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems like it's an auction, right? You put your hand up and it makes people look at you, but you don't actually want it.
Right. But they have, initially I was just going to discard the story because it was like, whatever, this is a publicity stunt, but they have said, and maybe they're just lying, but they have said that committed to trying to get this done. And like, if they need to increase their bid to overpay for this, then to do it. I mean, they are local to Miami, so at least, I mean, like, my one rule for arena sponsorships, always go local. So it at least satisfies that rule. So who knows, maybe this will happen, but if they do, so I think
my last a lot of question people that,
yes, DJ wants me to say that if this gets called the Bang Bros Center, then it will be abbreviated the BBC. So anytime somebody plays the Miami Heat, they will be reminded of Big Black Cocks.
but my question is, what do they then put on the top of the arena? Because right now on the top of the arena is a silhouette of a plane with the two A's for American Airlines.
Well, if you want to search these stories on the internet, I think some of these have some concept art. So,
okay,
I'll go for it. I don't think that'll be in our show notes.
I'm fine.
But hey, if you want links to some of the other stories, you can find those in our show notes as well. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to find those. Patreon. Sorry, this whole story threw me for a loop, but patreon.com/sportsoddsandends to find us on Patreon. If you want to hit us up with other great ideas for Miami arena sponsorships, find us on Twitter. I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Thank you all for listening.